Since last September, Lakeview Neurorehabilitation Center in Effingham has been under scrutiny for abusing and neglecting some of the people it cares for, children and adults with brain injuries and developmental disabilities. NHPR has been looking into these accusations, and it turns out the state had warning signs about Lakeview going back to at least 2011. Today, in the first of two stories on Lakeview, Jack Rodolico reports on the scope of those accusations.
In the summer of 2011, an 11-year-old boy left Lakeview with 22 marks on his body, bruises on his throat and cheeks, abrasions on his shoulders, severe diaper rash, and his mother says he had also pulled fistfuls of hair from his own head.
That devastated me. I've never seen him like that.
Jennifer Cody lives in Lebanon, Maine. Her son, Ryan, had been at Lakeview for just over a month, and he'd had unexplained bruises before. That's what prompted Cody to pull him permanently.
They were just really odd marks. And so I went in and asked the social worker there, and she said, well, there's two different stories going around. She said, staff said that he did it to himself, and some kids in the residence said a staff member did it to him.
Cody called the police, who referred the case to the state's Division of Children, Youth, and Families. The state investigation never determined the cause of Ryan's injuries. 3 years later, Ryan's story became part of a Disability Rights Center investigation. It found Ryan was one of many residents who suffered abuse and neglect at Lakeview. The report also said in 2012, a 22-year-old man died, likely of neglect, in a pool of his own urine. We also know clients go missing. In June 2013, a resident was gone for 2 days. She was found on top of a nearby mountain with hypothermia. When the Disability Rights Center made its findings public, Governor Maggie Hassan halted new admissions and ordered the state to investigate. In December, the state concluded Lakeview suffers from chronic understaffing. It also found Lakeview had no policy for reporting abuse and neglect to the state, which it is legally required to do. A second report is pending. In Effingham, Lakeview has 88 beds. The facility is spread out with residential cabins, offices, and a school. 350 people work there. Lakeview has social workers, behaviorists, and doctors and nurses, and clients from all over the country.
So it was hard for me to make the decision for him to go so far away from me.
Tom Allen lives in Pennsylvania. His son, who's here in New Hampshire, is autistic with mild mental retardation and bipolar disorder.
The plan was to transfer him to that site once he got a little bit more stable and then to come home. He's very smart, very lovable kid, but at times he gets aggressive.
Bites, you know, stabbing, hits, kicks, you know, scratches. That's all part of the game.
Bruce Thibodeau has worked at this facility under multiple owners for years. He left Lakeview last November. Staff get hurt all the time at Lakeview. A 2013 OSHA violation lists everything from kicks to the groin to concussions, broken noses, and dislocated shoulders. Lakeview Systems, the parent company, is headquartered in Texas and operates facilities in 3 states. The company started 20 years ago exclusively as rehab for people with traumatic brain injuries, or TBI.
Through the years, then we have morphed into Lakeview, into something that tried to put everyone in a big pot. Some of the staff may be working with autism one day and then turn around and work with someone with a TBI another day. So it became more difficult.
When working with clients with such complicated needs, accidents and injuries are inevitable. But Lakeview is under scrutiny for putting some staff in harm's way without support and covering up abuse by other staff. In 2013, a mother claimed her daughter was abused and neglected more than 10 times. In one instance, a staffer picked her up off the ground by her collar. That client was Jessica Klerfeld, and her mother is Linda Blumpkin of New York City. Blumpkin admits her daughter is hard to handle.
I had reprimanded her about something, and the next thing I knew, I was lying on the sidewalk with Jessica kicking me, spitting on me, pulling my eyeglasses off, throwing them into the road.
That was the first time Klerfeld became violent, back in 2003, when she was 14. Clearfeld has autism, mild mental retardation, bipolar disorder, and a rare genetic disorder. She spent 3 years at Lakeview, and an investigation by the state of New York found her care lacking at all levels. When Clearfeld was suffering from a vaginal yeast infection, Lakeview's doctor prescribed her a foot fungal ointment. Blumkin says that doctor never even examined her daughter. The Board of Medicine is investigating this case.
Basically, we felt deceived. We felt that Lakeview had made promises to us that not only did they not keep, but it's inconceivable to me that they could have had an honest intention that they ever would keep them.
Lakeview declined to be interviewed for this story, citing ongoing investigations by the state. But a company representative did respond to some questions by email. Lakeview says it's very expensive to care for people with these types of disabilities. It reports the average cost is $292,000 per client per year. But the tab is higher for clients who need round-the-clock care. And who pays for this? Mostly taxpayers, through Medicaid and some education dollars. The state says about $4.4 million Medicaid dollars went to Lakeview in 2014.
And they're making that money by, in my mind, defrauding the payers.
Kirk Simoneau is a lawyer representing four families of former Lakeview clients, one of whom has filed suit.
I have statements from staffers who have referred, and I'm going to actually read this, referred to Lakeview as a human cattle shop. Others have said that they'd rather be dead than ever go back there because of how badly they were treated and how badly the individuals were treated.
Simoneau's clients, including the family of the 22-year-old man who died there in 2012, claim emotional, verbal, physical, and sexual abuse. And they say staff covered it up. Jennifer Cody's son was supposed to have one-to-one care, so she says someone should have seen how Ryan got those bruises and why he pulled out his hair.
The proof, I should say, is in the numbers. They can say whatever they want and cover it up and, you know, we do everything right, but how could this happen to so many people?
That's a question no one has answered. And this may surprise you. Everything reported in this story, and much more, it was all known by regulators. Yet Lakeview has gotten a clean bill of health from the state year after year. And that's what we'll look at in tomorrow's story. For NHBR News, I'm Jack Rodolico. This past fall, when the Disability Rights Center released two reports laying out detailed accounts of abuse and neglect at Lakeview, Governor Maggie Hassan called the allegations deeply disturbing. She shut down new admissions and ordered a review of how the Department of Health and Human Services regulates the facility. Here's Governor Hassan last week.
Well, obviously, the concerns and issues raised by the DRC report were very, very important. We take them very seriously, as we do all reports of potential violations of licensure standards or other kinds of potential abuse or lack of care.
But for several years, there has been a stream of incidents at Lakeview. Violence, missing residents, frequent 911 calls, and a client who died, allegedly of neglect. Yet none of those incidents prompted sanctions from state regulators.
This was no surprise to them, and yes, they were aware of the gentleman who died up there.
Karen Rosenberg is the attorney with the Disability Rights Center who wrote the reports on Lakeview. She points to the state law regulating residential care facilities.
That statute authorizes our State Department of Health and Human Services to deny, revoke, or suspend licenses when they have reason to believe that people's lives are being jeopardized, when facilities aren't providing for their health, emotional, physical well-being. And there was plenty of information out there to give the department reason to exercise that authority.
We asked the department, why didn't it act until the Disability Rights Center reports were published? Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas declined an interview for this story. In an email, though, Tumpas wrote, "I do not think it would be accurate for you to report that the department did not act prior to the Disability Rights Center report." Within TUMPAS's department, the Bureau of Developmental Services is responsible for caring for people with disabilities and brain injuries. And for years, placing people at Lakeview has been a last resort for that bureau.
Whenever you place somebody in a place of your last resort, then you better watch what you're doing.
Joni Beasley works at UNH's Institute on Disability. She travels the country consulting states on services for people with disabilities. And New Hampshire recruited Beasley to go to Lakeview twice, once in 2012 and then again in 2013 after the young man died there. Beasley says state officials told her,
"We have people there who are very vulnerable, and we don't think that they're getting the kind of services that they need, and we would like to help them do a better job."
Lakeview declined interviews for this story, but Beasley says when she went there, high-level managers were not open to her suggestions. And 1 year after Beasley's visit, the state of New York had a similar experience with Lakeview management. The New York Justice Center for the Protection of People with Special Needs took issue with the care some New York residents were getting at Lakeview. In early 2014, the Justice Center sent a series of letters to Lakeview complaining it didn't report abusive staff and suggesting Lakeview charged for care it wasn't providing. The center threatened New York might pull funding.
Sir, whatever your authority is to order them to do things, you are their regulator.
Linda Blumpkin lives in New York City. Her daughter, Jessica Klerfeld, was at Lakeview from 2010 to 2013. Jessica was neglected and abused at Lakeview. But after filing numerous complaints that went nowhere, Blumpkin became frustrated with New Hampshire regulators and sought the help of the New York Justice Center. And last year, the New York Justice Center, it took its concerns about Lakeview, that the facility might be operating outside the law, and alerted New Hampshire, specifically the office with the power to revoke Lakeview's license. That office is headed by John Martin.
Well, is that a matter that you will now be addressing?
In what way?
In what way?
Blumpkin called Martin and secretly recorded the conversation.
Shows that according to your bureau, Lakeview has a clean record. They're a splendid facility that's not in violation of anything.
That's exactly right. As far as their clinical inspections go, they have been deficiency-free for at least the last 4 years.
The state does yearly unannounced visits to Lakeview. And at the same time New Hampshire inspectors concluded Lakeview residents received proper treatment, the New York Justice Center found major problems. The Justice Center also concluded New Hampshire's regulators weren't doing their jobs. In emails to Linda Blumpkin, a New York investigator called New Hampshire's conclusions, quote, "sadly illuminating regarding the Department of Health and Human Services, which we had not intended to rely upon in any case." Martin went on to tell Blumpkin the state found problems at Lakeview, but not violations of the law.
We know that they have challenges, but that's different from being out of compliance with our specific rules.
That was a year ago. Since the Disability Rights Center reports, the licensing unit has cited Lakeview for violations several times. On December 30th, a female resident climbed under a fence, naked, and disappeared in the woods for 45 minutes. 2 days later, the state found five staff handling 30 clients, most of whom were supposed to have intensive supervision. And the Department of Education found Lakeview Special Ed School failed to meet an array of basic standards.
I don't know why it failed so badly in New Hampshire.
Again, Joni Beasley at UNH.
I think it's a tragedy, though, and a travesty. And I know the state of New Hampshire is really working hard to make positive changes in the right direction as a result of it. But isn't it terrible that somebody had to die in order for that to happen? Of course it is.
On February 9th, New Hampshire approved Lakeview's 55-page plan of correction. That plan says Lakeview will boost pay for low-level staff by 50 cents an hour and reduce the number of residents with highly complex needs. So while New Hampshire lets Lakeview stay in business, other states are making their own judgments. Maine is pulling all its residents from Lakeview. And late last year, the New York Justice Center wrote to Lakeview. The letter was blunt. Quote, New Hampshire oversight of Lakeview is not sufficient to ensure the safety of service recipients placed from outside of the state. For NHPR News, I'm Jack Rotolico. Lakeview's CEO Chris Slover says if the state won't allow the facility's special ed school to remain open, then he won't be able to keep the entire facility open. That includes 88 beds for people with brain injuries and other disabilities.
I don't have a choice. I mean, what they're asking for is unrealistic.
Stover spoke moments after the Board of Education rejected Lakeview's appeal of an earlier decision that stripped the school of its certification. Before the unanimous decision denying the appeal, board member Cindy Chagnon said Lakeview hasn't met its commitments to the state.
I just kept feeling the disconnect with what they were saying they have and what was actually happening with the kids in the classroom. Well,
Lakeview has residents from all over the country, many of whom have been placed there in part to receive an education. New Hampshire has already been pulling its residents and placing them in other facilities. The governor's office says the state will communicate with other states to ensure for the safety of Lakeview residents. Lakeview Systems operates facilities in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. Slover says it's possible he will sell the New Hampshire facility or that 280 people here will be out of a job. For NHPR News, I'm Jack Rotolico. In an email sent to employees, Lakeview's executive director, Patricia Reed, says staff shouldn't plan on having a job as of August 1st, although closing the facility could take longer. Reed says plans to sell the facility haven't materialized and, quote, "We have struggled together over the past almost 3 months to turn the corner with regard to our status with New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services." Jake Leon with that department says the state has more closely monitored Lakeview since new allegations of a rape.
There has been increased oversight of Lakeview in that time and increased expectations of what Lakeview needs to do to ensure the safety of the residents there.
Lakeview's clients are minors and adults with brain injuries and developmental disabilities. Police and the local circuit court confirm an individual was arrested on June 11th on charges of aggravated felonious sexual assault. Dick Cohen with the Disability Rights Center says his organization became aware of the incident shortly thereafter.
We received a report that a male resident was sexually assaulted by another male resident, and that was confirmed in a rape kit done at the hospital. We also learned apparently the staff on duty was asleep.
Cohen also says this wasn't the first time this perpetrator attacked the victim. Governor Maggie Hassan shut down new admissions to Lakeview last fall, and in April, the state pulled the facility's special education license. Lakeview did not respond to requests for comment by airtime. For NHPR News, I'm Jack Rotolico. Only 25 years ago, New Hampshire was a national model for the care of people with disabilities and mental illness. Now, we're shutting down a facility with a long track record of abusing and neglecting those same people. So, how'd we get from there to here? To understand that, you actually have to go back a little further and visit other facilities the state shut down.
So these were actually patient rooms at one time, the more violent patients.
Paul Shigori is a retired psychologist who worked at New Hampshire State Hospital in the 70s, when it was an asylum for people with mental illness. Shigori gave me a tour of rooms in the basement.
You can see the thickness of the brick walls and, I mean, the size of it, which is probably what, maybe 8 feet by 12 feet, I don't know, one window.
And there was a second institution in New Hampshire called Laconia State School. That was the state-run facility for people with intellectual disabilities, people like Roberta Gallant of Concord. Gallant has become an outspoken advocate for people with disabilities. In 1956, her parents dropped her off at Laconia. She was 5 years old, and she'd be there into her 30s.
And they slapped and kicked us, pulled our hair, and they burnt some of the residents with their cigarettes. And the staff physically performed sex on me.
Abuse and neglect at the Laconia State School started to come to light around the time Gallant arrived. But its very existence was emblematic of a trend in care nationally.
Society did not want to deal with us, so they warehoused us in an institution.
That was a mindset that had actually begun with good intentions. Asylums were built as refuges in the 1800s and early 1900s, but by the mid-1900s, they were overcrowded and understaffed, like at New Hampshire State Hospital.
I can sort of feel some of the anguish of the patients who came here. Nobody came here because they were happy, and there are tens of thousands of stories of unhappy people that were here.
Things began to change when new drugs allowed people with mental illness to leave asylums. News reports also exposed inhumane conditions, shifting public sentiment. Between 1955 and 1980, more than 400,000 Americans left institutions. Lawsuits also drove public policy. Dick Cohen is the outgoing executive director of the Disability Rights Center, which uncovered abuse at Lakeview last year. Cohen also blew the whistle on Laconia in 1978. He helped file the lawsuit that would shut Laconia down.
What we alleged was that, number one, they weren't getting treatment. Number two, they were also, in many instances, being actively harmed, which the state didn't have a right to do. And three, they could all be treated with the appropriate supports in the communities.
In the 1980s, the state backed this idea of community-based care, and New Hampshire became a national model for it. But support always lagged for people with co-occurring problems, like the people who'd ultimately wind up at Lakeview. And then money started to dry up. First federal funding in the 80s, and then state funding in the 90s and early 2000s. In stepped a private company called Lakeview. It opened in 1992 as a facility for people with brain injuries. But as public money continued to be cut, Lakeview accepted the people New Hampshire had the hardest time serving, often people with both a mental illness and an intellectual disability. Then in 2009, the legislature cut funding for an acute care psychiatric unit at New Hampshire Hospital.
That event was pretty significant, but I don't think we realized how significant that event was until time passed.
Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas.
We went back and we looked at the data and saw that for the five-year period leading up to November 2009, we had 12 admissions into Lakeview. In the roughly 5 years since the closure of that unit, we've had 77.
And it isn't just New Hampshire that has struggled to meet the needs of people with the most complex behaviors and conditions. Until recently, Lakeview had clients from across the country, even as far as Hawaii. The next steps for New Hampshire aren't entirely clear. Since Governor Hassan shut down new admissions to Lakeview last fall, people who would have wound up there are instead in and out of nursing homes, psychiatric facilities, and jail. Others, though, are finding themselves in a more hopeful place. But as we'll hear in tomorrow's story, that place is not without controversy. For NHPR News, I'm Jack Rodolico. At a recent town meeting in Madison, just south of Conway, a tiny room was packed. Five zoning board members sat at a table in front of the police chief, frustrated neighbors, and attorneys for a company called Beckett Family of Services. The mood was tense. This was the third such meeting, and the prior two ended in stalemates. Board member Kevin O'Neill expresses his bewilderment to Beckett.
I'm sorry, but it kind of seems to me that you guys just kind of come in here and said, we want this. I don't think anybody here wants to hold you up as a negative opinion. What you do is good work. Why not just work with us?
Beckett operates group homes and schools throughout northern New England. And when state regulators began to pull people out of Lakeview in late 2014, Beckett rented two residential homes in Madison and took in a handful of those Lakeview clients. Although it's not required by law, Beckett never told neighbors or local officials that people with severe disabilities were moving in. At issue now, the town is asking Beckett to apply for a special exception to local zoning rules to operate their two new group homes. The company has refused.
So this is a nice house.
Yes. Yeah. We try to make it like a normal, everyday home.
Jamie Fox runs Beckett's New Hampshire operations. The company also has facilities in Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts. Lakeview, by the way, also owned eight group homes like these, but it sold them last December. They were picked up by the Mentor Network, a massive, publicly traded corporation that runs facilities in 35 states. And the new Beckett homes in Madison? They're normal houses on rural roads with neighbors through the trees.
We try to pick out homes that we would live in ourselves. The individuals in this home, we spoke with parents, guardians, and the individuals to determine on where they would like to be, all of them in a wooded area. So this is our treehouse cabin.
Beckett specializes in clients with very challenging behaviors, even aggression. The goal is to surround residents with a clinical team, help them communicate better, and allow them to live full lives in a community. I asked Derek Janvrin what he likes about living here.
Because I like make good food. I'm a good waiter. I'm a good waiter, and I help cook dinner.
What kind of food do you like to cook?
Chicken, homemade chicken fingers. That's what we're having tonight, chicken fingers.
And you're cooking?
Yes, Jack.
This is what the state wants, people with disabilities living in community-based homes. That idea was almost unimaginable under state policy until about 1980. Before then, people were housed in institutions using public money. But a series of lawsuits and policy shifts shuttered those facilities. Today, the state has 1,300 group homes integrated into communities. Like Beckett's two Madison houses, these group homes have no signs outside advertising what's happening inside.
And based on my observations, they are taking clients that they're equipped to handle.
This is Police Chief James Mullen back at that tense town meeting.
The staff appears to be trained in use of force. They have used it. You know, it's not a pretty thing to look at, but like with police work, unfortunately, that is an occupational hazard.
Mullen says Beckett staff have called 911 a few times, but they've mostly handled their own problems. Reassurances like this, though, don't mean much to neighbors like Kate Sargent.
And being a small family with small children, I sort of have a bit of an issue abutting the property where there are people with mental and physical issues, whatever they are.
I think they don't understand.
Jim and Ginger Wright live in Henniker, and their son Derek lives in one of the Madison homes.
They don't understand who's living there and why they're living there.
You know, and even though Derek is aggressive, he's not going to come over to your house and then...
Right. He's going to stay in that house. He's not going to go anywhere from that house without staff.
Still, the Madison Zoning Board is frustrated that a company could open a business that worries neighbors, and the town has no say in the matter. These same debates happened across the state more than 30 years ago when group homes first opened in the state. Towns tried to keep them out by using local zoning. Two cases made it to the New Hampshire Supreme Court. In both cases, the court ruled these group homes were carrying out state business. As a result, towns couldn't use local zoning to, quote, frustrate state policy. Beckett's attorney, Nathan Fennessy, points to a letter from the Attorney General's office to Madison. That letter says Beckett has a contract with the state to operate in Madison, and the town's local zoning just doesn't apply.
We do know what state law says, and state law says we don't have to go through that process. And in fact, going through that process would be contrary to state law.
The zoning board goes back and forth debating. They acknowledge neighboring home values could drop, but they also acknowledge you can't pick your neighbors. They also admit they just aren't convinced they don't have the authority to tell Beckett what to do. But ultimately, they vote 4-1 to stop frustrating Beckett.
I vote no, and I'll tell you why.
Kevin O'Neill, the dissenting vote.
It's due to cases like this that the law is refined. And I think that we have the responsibility of somehow bringing it to the attention of the people of New Hampshire and have it legislated.
For now, Beckett can move forward, which it really had already done. The vote in Madison is a relief to Jim Wright. He's happy his son is in a place where he's safe.
We still miss him, you know. We wish he was home, but it's a hard thing to do every day. And that's how I feel. just that people would be more understanding.
Since Lakeview began shutting down, companies that operate group homes have expanded into small towns in New Hampshire. If that continues, those communities may want to look to Madison for guidance.
And with that, we close the appeal. The next item on the agenda.
For NHPR News, I'm Jack Rodolico.